Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half, a lovely tribute to our good old friend, Ozzy Oswaldo Castillo. Also, we're unveiling a new game, March Madness Madness, and we get the brackets rolling. So look forward to
coming up this weekend. Don't miss the COVID Classic Countdown on the Toolbox. We'll be counting down the best songs of fear, anxiety, and depression all this weekend. Brought to you by Olive Garden. When you're here, you're desperate. We're warm inside the Toolbox, where we finally welcome spring. Let's say goodbye to the darkness of winter as the flowers bloom, the days get longer, and the annual migrations continue. Why do so many Californians move to Texas? Exhibit A is Boys Don't Cry on the Toolbox.
Riding on the rain. I've got my hat on. I've got my boots dusty. I've got my saddle on my horse. It's cold. Of course. I wanna be a cowboy. And you can be my cowgirl.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Alex Ponovic. With Gina Gratt, with Bald Brian on sound effects, Mike Dawson filling in on the news, and the first rounds of March Madness Madness. And now, today is not a day for stupid intro jokes. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We're going to mandate you get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing. Gina Grad should be back very soon. Good day, Bald Brian.
Three times, fool.
Well, sad news to start the show. Our good friend, friend of the show, Oswaldo Castillo, has passed away.
That was shocking.
Yes.
I got an email from Chris.
I found out moments before I walked out on stage in Reno on Friday.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
You for a good time?
Yeah, I'm good at compartmentalizing, so it was fine. I mean, the show was fine, but it was with a heavy heart. Ozzy.
How long did you know Ozzy?
Well, my recollection, although I was just reading his Wikipedia, but Wikipedia, I guess, can be off.
Says, Ozzy has a Wikipedia page.
Says I met him in 89, but wow. My recollection was that Ozzy, who was a Nicaraguan, who came here to escape death and oppression and maybe the Sandinistas.
Political asylum, right? He was seeking political asylum.
Yeah, although that's a big word, so I'm never quite sure. I never got all the official particulars, but
and as much as you and I will probably never seek political asylum, that's pretty intense.
Yeah, he had to flee Nicaragua, and he came here, and he worked as a carpenter because that's what people do who come to Los Angeles from different places. They end up in the construction field. So where'd
you come from?
From Los Angeles. I fled North Hollywood. It's a de facto job for people that don't have jobs, right. Essentially. Like if you don't have a college degree or your dad doesn't have a company or you're not going to law school, if you're just kind of a floater, you just end up in construction because you can wander onto a construction site and pick up a shovel and anyone can do it. So all my friends got into construction. Ozzy was into construction. Ozzy met Ray, and Ray and Ozzy worked together for a while, but that was a difficult relationship, I think. And some dispute over a ladder ended up separating them.
Such a cliche.
Yeah, you guys laugh, but those fiberglass extension ladders are big, like 12-foot A-framer. That's a big ticket item. That's
like a nice piece.
$300 item. I think Ozzy had it in his storage, and he didn't want to give it back to Ray until Ray paid him. I don't know. I don't know the full story, but I ended up then getting Ozzy. So Ray basically said, you take Ozzy. And, you know, I was in a, I guess at the time, I was a full-time carpenter. So I wasn't really in the, in a position where I could kind of be generous. You know, Ozzy was sort of, he was sort of half carpenter, but he was kind of half mascot. You know, he was kind of wandering around, getting the flap steak ready, firing up the grill.
Right. He's a clubhouse guy.
Yeah, and it's not really the kind of thing you can do. If Ray is running a business, you got to make money off of these guys. And, you know, two-hour lunch break flap steak extravaganzas. And Ozzy, boy, don't ever sleep on Ozzy's flap steak. He
Fantastic.
Made, yeah, I guess it would be called skirt steak. He would go to like the Mexican butcher. He'd get all this really thinly sliced beef. It's a kind of a thing where obviously he couldn't afford the expensive cuts of beef, but this was so thin and he would marinate it and all the citrus, and he would just do it overnight and then he'd just get it going on the grill. These big sheets of flap steak. I mean, the size of a Frisbee.
Truly some of the highlights of the morning show when Ozzy would come in at, you know, 9:30 a.m. and barbecue. We'd all get off at 10:15 a.m. and have a feast.
Yeah, he'd cook the rice up. He'd make this chimichurri sauce.
Yes,
before the chimichurri was all the rage, Ozzy was making his own chimichurri. Mm-hmm. He'd make the beans and the rice and all that stuff. And if we ever threw a party later on in life, when I had a little success, Ozzy was always tasked. I mean, he was paid and paid pretty well to just handle the food. And he'd just be back there. You've never seen people jockey like they would jockey for Ozzy and the flap steak. They'd get a full plate of it. They'd sit down. They'd get about
box out.
Yeah, they would. They'd get about halfway into their flap steak and then they'd go, shit, there's a line forming. I better go put back up. I mean, you've never seen, you know, normally when people have a little barbecue backyardy thing, people get their tacos or their burgers and they just sit down and that's about it.
Sometimes they don't finish. Do you see a plate with a little bit of, you know, dusting left on it?
Not with Ozzy and the flap steak. Never. Everyone was in line. Everyone was going back for seconds and thirds. Ozzy was never happier than to perform that service for people. He was totally in his element. Everyone, you know, showered him with praise. It wasn't free. I got to tell you, when the bill came, man, it was not, it wasn't always that cheap, but
$300 worth of steak.
And then some, but it was always worth it. And Ozzy was this, he was an optimist. I think he was a guy who was kind of perpetually in a good mood, sort of had a smile on his face. He had a kind of a, I don't know, kind of a little bit of an innocence, kind of a boyish, kind of a charm, kind of a naivete even. And he was very thoughtful. I don't think people know how thoughtful Ozzy was. Ozzy would show up to my house on like my anniversary, my wedding anniversary, and like present Lynette with some flowers and a balloon. He would show up for the kids. I know it always caught me off guard. I was like, what fucking day is it? He would show up for the kids' birthday, always bring them something. He was a very thoughtful, sweet-natured guy.
I never knew that.
Oh yeah, he was thoughtful. He was the kind of guy who would always, like, when he showed up for the morning show or where he showed up, he always kind of bring something with
him. You're 100% right. You talk about him being an optimist, or however you put it. Chris emailed me a little before the show, like, hey, if you have any Ozzy stories that you remember, and I really don't. When I think of Ozzy, I think of that perpetual grin. He was always smiling. He just always had that smile on his face, and he was so happy to see the guy. You know, he would walk in. He would walk into the warehouse where you are now. I hadn't seen him since the radio show. This is 2012, 2013, and it's like old times. You know, just a guy's got a big smile plastered on his face. He was so cheerful.
Yeah, he had these kind of cute little idiosyncratic things. Like, he always wore his knee pads. Like, I did construction for.
He often did. Knee pads.
25 years, I never owned a pair of knee pads. I just lay on the ground. You know, he had his knee pads, but he'd have his knee pads on even if he wasn't working.
Oh, yeah.
So he'd come walking in with the knee pads on, like you'd get dressed and put your pants on. He put his knee pads on. So Ozzy and I probably met in the early 90s, maybe 92, 93. I think our first job was building the gym in Pasadena, Bodies in Motion, where I ended up working as an instructor later on in my well, the deal was if me and Ozzy built the gym, then I could work at the gym.
Sounds like an Asian's threat. The only way you're working in this gym is if you build it.
Yeah, that was basically the decree, and so I did build it. I built it out. It was a big open space. We had to hang bags and put the ring in there and build a receptionist desk and benches and, you know, showers and the bathroom and all that kind of stuff. I remember one of the very first things I did was the owner who, he liked his money, but he didn't want to waste money on shit like a jacuzzi. There's a big jacuzzi that was built into the floor, big tile and everything. He was just like, board that shit up. Like, one of the first things I did was just go right over the top of the jacuzzi with the plywood. So Ozzy and I worked together, and then later on, I bought a house, and I think Ozzy got in on that, and then I bought another house, and Ozzy was always getting in on whatever jobs that I could have. Later on, when work slowed down, I was always trying to kind of throw him stuff if I could get something going for him or get him busy. That was always kind of the plan. Ozzy, you know, he had, I don't know if you'd say his life was sad, but he was a little bit of a drifter in the sense that he had a wife and kids. I think they separated at some point. And then Ozzy, yeah, that's Ozzy. And he had, he'd make his noises, he'd do his stuff. And he would just kind of float in, work for a while, and float out. And we'd hang out a little bit, Christmas parties, things like that, have a few beers. But he was just kind of always there. Later on, when we wrote The Hammer, I guess we did the Adam Carolla project first, so that was perfect casting for Ozzy. And, you know, now I'm glad there's all that footage. I don't know. It's all on YouTube or whatever. People love that show. If you want to watch season one or the only season we ever did on that, you can see Ozzy in his element.
Wasn't it just Jane Kaczmarek who was on the show singing Ozzy's praises from The Hammer?
Oh yeah!
I mean, he stole the show in a lot of ways.
Everybody loved Ozzy and the Hammer. Yep. The great Pete Berg once said to me, "He's like, I don't know where you got that guy, but that is great goddamn casting. That guy was great." But
it's the role he was born to play.
It was just Ozzy playing Ozzy, and you know when it came time to do the movie that he was in. I mean, he was in 3/4 of the scenes in that movie. We didn't send him to acting school or anything. Just me and Hinch were just like, just say this and say it again. And had a couple. It's funny. I think about the only time the whole movie, I was trying to get him to pronounce certain things correctly. But and it was funny. He didn't really understand all the direction from the director and like where to stand and how not to block the camera, like cues. I could remember when we shot a scene that was inside the gym lobby, I was supposed to be talking to Heather Jurgensen, my love interest, and we're supposed to talk for a little bit. And then at some point, I was going to go, so are you single or something? And that was Ozzy's cue to like walk in. It was a great scene and just kind of fuck up the whole thing for me. Right. Like, hey, Jerry just got dumped, you know, and he's crying and all this kind of stuff. But Ozzy, I don't think he spoke enough English to understand where the cue was. So after we tried it a few times, my favorite part of production is when camera guys get involved. Like the camera guy's holding the camera, but he grabs Ozzy and like with his free hand.
He's stage managing.
Yeah, he pushes him into the scene and Ozzy just comes in there. We should find that scene, Max Zapata. That was kind of Ozzy at his best. But he was very pure. He was sort of naive in certain ways. And doing the movie with him was fun. I mean, he was happy to be there. He got it. He and I had a shorthand because we worked together so much that whatever we were doing in the movie was kind of stuff we'd be doing anyway. Sure. Just come pick him up, go work on a job site. Yeah, he'd be making tacos or, you know, he'd made his tacos out of cactus or whatever in the movie, which was sort of torn from the pages of my life. But
That sort of marries my one thought with my other thought, which is you alluded to perhaps Ozzy's life was maybe a little bit sad or had some sad elements to it. Think about this. This guy fled his homeland, like under political persecution or whatever it was, starred in a movie, was in a TV show, like got to cook basically for a living. Ozzy had what could be called a charmed life.
Yeah, he did. He had a very... You know, I don't know what his aspirations were. I don't think he wanted to be an actor or a celebrity.
I'm
going to
say not
anything,
an actor.
but you know, he can say, I mean, that film will always be around, and it will always be young Ozzy just being as cute and sweet and great and genuine as you can get. So Ozzy would. You know, he'd come over, he'd hang out. He was always great with kids because he'd make a lot of noises like click, click, click with his tongue. And when my kids were babies, you know, he'd just be leaning over, making the pop, pop. And I'd just come in and he'd be sitting in my kitchen eating. And just go, Ozzy, you have to pretend to work when I come home. Those are the windows. I'm out all day. I'm going to be home from the radio show about noon. You pretend to work during that little window where I come home. But You had to love the guy. He was sweet. He was 62 years of age. He was not.
Did we ever figure out what happened?
He's not old. He got COVID.
No.
He had some pre-existing conditions. He had, I think he had some high blood pressure. I talked to Drew about it for a while in Reno. Drew said that the high blood pressure is not a thing, but I think he was diabetic as well. And diabetic is a thing when it comes to COVID. I don't know all the official particulars. I don't know where he got it. I don't know if he got it in the hospital. I don't know what happened, but he was in the hospital. He was in the hospital for, a couple of weeks, and, he got a little bit worse every day. He just never got back. Once he got in, he couldn't get back. And I was on the phone with, you know, doctors and nurses and people. You know, there was a woman named Sharon who's Ozzy worked for Sharon for quite a bit. And Sharon's a sweet, sweet woman. And she worked on the Hammer, actually.
Handyman interesting.
Well, she worked on the Hammer, so she met Ozzy on the Hammer, and then when we were wrapped with the Hammer, I think Ozzy went and did some work for Sharon, and Sharon is just a great, sweet soul, so she loved the Hammer, she loved Ozzy, she loved working on it, she works in the industry, so she was able to befriend Ozzy, and, you know, he probably worked at her house, but the thing about Ozzy is he'd be working at your house, and the next thing you know, you guys have a two-hour lunch.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how... Ozzy was
the guy he was.
Yeah, he was an exquisitely social guy, and it was interesting because no one could understand what he was saying. So it's weird to be that social. Like normally, when people have a language barrier, they kind of keep to themselves. They work, you know, they speak, you know, in their own tongue.
A little withdrawn. Yeah,
they're not. They don't sit down and have lunch for 2 hours with you when you can't understand what they're saying. But Ozzy was also kind of a universal language of he liked food. He knew that would be something that was a sort of universal thing that everyone loved. He was a great cook, and he'd cook, and you'd just sit there, and he'd just smile, and he'd laugh, and he'd say stuff that you didn't understand half the time, and then he'd start laughing, and then you'd just nod your head and laugh.
He was affable.
He was totally affable. Yeah, that was his thing. Dawson?
He was always happy. In all the years I've known him, I've never seen Ozzy angry ever in one moment. And the cool thing, one thing I really remember, and I remember noticing this after the Hammer got released, you might expect someone who followed the path of Ozzy and all of a sudden he's in a movie and getting all this attention. You might expect that to somehow change somebody and make him like into a different person. The only way it changed Ozzy is it amplified his joy by like 100. He was Ozzy, but so much more happy.
Right.
Just amazing, amazing dude.
Ozzy plus.
Yeah, Ozzy plus. So, that's...
Wait, speaking of which, do you guys remember Adam and Dawson? I don't know if you remember this or not. It was a big night for you, Adam. The Hammer premiere. We got to go to it. At least I did. And I remember Ozzy was there.
Yeah.
What it was. Yeah, and Ozzy was there, and he had since grown a full handlebar mustache.
Yeah.
The Raleigh Fingers mustache, right. And was really soaking it up. Like, he was having the best night.
Yeah, it's nice. I'm glad I was able to share some of that with him, or give him that, or let him have those moments, because he definitely had a good time. He was a little bit of a ham. He had a good time filming the Adam Carolla project. He probably argued with Ray more than anybody. That's about the only time you ever saw him like argue with somebody. But yeah, Dawson.
Speaking of his cooking, he had this proprietary Nicaraguan spice that I guess his mother made. And one time we were talking about the spice, and he says, "I can get you some." I'm like, "Okay, what's in it?" He says, "You can never ask that question. I will never tell you what's in it, but I'll give it to you anytime." And since the radio show was done, he used to bring it to me on KLSX. He showed up 2 months ago with a bag of spice in his hands and just keeps me loaded in Nicaraguan spice. And I didn't even have to ask for it anymore. So I still got pieces of Ozzy at the house.
You got to take it to a lab, have it analyzed, figure out what's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, deconstruct it. So, and he would work for me on and off. You know, he would show up if things were dry, if there wasn't any work. And, I would try to help him. I would co-sign for his truck, or, help him out if he had a hospital bill or some stuff like that. So, I probably could have been better. I think... I think when you reflect on these times, you think, well, maybe I should have done this, or I could have done that. But overall, I think I was a positive in his life.
Oh, I would say so.
I would say so.
Without knowing the intricacies of a relationship, it seems like a net positive.
Well, what you saw is what you got with Ozzy. I mean, it's not like he and I had quiet moments together.
Reflection.
Where it did not mirror the kind of outward relationship we had in public. We didn't have that. Ozzy was Ozzy. That's, I think everyone got the same Ozzy, right? Everyone got the same version.
Oh, yeah. When I first met Ozzy, the first time I ever saw Ozzy was in The Hammer. So the first time I saw him in real life, he was a movie star to me. He wasn't the Ozzy on the radio show or anything like that. So that was crazy. And then he would cook for us. He would make the flap steaks on the barbecue outside with like this amazing chimichurri sauce. And he would just do it whenever, like just randomly. Just I would never know when it was coming. And then at the last Carolla Drinks barbecue, he was handing out plastic bags of these spices to everybody. He had he probably had like 50 bags of spices, and he was just handing them out like party favors.
Yeah, that's who he was. He found something he liked. He wanted to share it with people. He didn't, he never had any money, but he certainly, there was no lack of effort. I mean, he would put all those spice bags together, hand it out to everybody. And
that's how COVID began.
And that's how COVID began. Yeah. So it's very sad. He led a good life. He touched a lot of people. We were lucky to have him. And I probably knew Ozzy. I mean, it had to be coming up on 30 years if it wasn't 30 years. Yeah. I don't know. What's the wiki say there, Dawson?
Castillo was born in Nicaragua and in 1986 fled to the United States. He left Nicaragua in 1979, settled in Los Angeles, met Adam Carolla in 89. We addressed that. Co-star of The Hammer.
Yeah, it was the early 90s. Be, 30 years. So 30-ish.
That would be, yeah.
Did you ever find that scene?
Yeah, I think we got it.
Oh, yeah. This is the scene where...
Maybe we should just hold off until an evening frees up for you.
Oh, just pick me up at noon tomorrow. What's the big deal?
Oh, the dreaded day date.
Oh, come on. What is so bad about a day date?
What's so bad about it? It's not a date. It's an outing at best.
Jerry girlfriend leaving him.
Excuse me?
Jerry girlfriend leaving him.
She...
My girlfriend. Oh. We broke up.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Have you guys met? Lindsay? Loudmouth? Lindsay?
When?
She left. You know, it's been a while.
Wednesday.
Wednesday. She technically moved out on Wednesday, but she checked out a year before that. We both did.
Wow.
It's been a while.
Well, I'll see you at noon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Nice to meet you.
Silky smooth.
Yeah.
Silk.
Working?
Yeah, velvety smooth. Oh. I don't know if you can understand this, Ozzy.
Knee pads on.
Don't dig it when they find out you've been dumped.
Well, it's true.
It's also true I have a hairy ass. But I don't weave it in every conversation I have.
There's Ozzy. Oh, he's such a natural.
Take this in the spirit of what's intended. You were the third best actor in that clip.
That's right. The Hammer, by the way, is on Prime Video if you guys want to watch it.
You can rent it.
All right. Well, Ozzy will be missed. I'll keep you guys updated on anything. I knew he was sick. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't want to share it until I kind of, you know, wanted to honor that. His anonymity a little bit. I wanted to find out what was going on with his family and his health and all that kind of stuff. And it turned out the worst. So he shall be missed. And I will, I'll keep you guys updated on, you know, funerals and things, you know, things if you want to attend or somewhere to send something or something like that.
Please.
I just found out Friday night, and I've been in Reno the whole weekend, so I haven't really gotten caught up yet, but I will get caught up. All right, let's see. We got the Reno recap. We're going to do March Madness. I think it's kind of interesting. We pick topics that anger me, and we will build a bracket, and we'll see who takes home the gold. All right. We will do the March Madness, and we'll start the brackets right after this.
It's time for Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
Nicaragua.
If you said The Hammer.
Nicaragua.
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
That was great.
That was great. Who thought of that? Is that you, Dawson?
Nicaragua.
Nice job. All right. Now, Dawson, you're going to... I got my bell here. You're going to lead us in?
It's that time of year again. We're taking 32 of the top topics that piss Adam off and having them square off in a tournament of rage. It's March Madness. Round one will take place over the next 5 shows. We'll tee up the subjects, and Adam will tee off on them. Which will reign supreme as the thing that makes Adam Carolla the maddest? Let's find out in the Big Rants. Our first round is from the Classics Conference. Red Turn Arrows, going head-to-head with Emotional Support Animals on Planes.
Well, Red Turn Arrows is a perennial all-star because it embodies everything that is wrong with our society. It is an absolute fucking waste of time. And the biggest waste of time is me trying to explain to everyone why it's a waste of time. Because they go, oh, no, the arrows are good because the traffic backs up. Yes, the green arrows are good. Once the green arrows are done, then there should be no arrows because you should just fucking turn when it's safe to turn like you do in every other goddamn intersection on the planet. And the thing that always pisses me off is when you head somewhere and you could go to like Bozeman, Montana, and you will see they will flash or they will go to yellow or they will go away altogether. But not in L.A., not the place with the worst fucking traffic on the planet. Ours turn red, and there's certain intersections. If you pull up in certain times, that fucking arrow is red, and you'll see the cars queuing up and then spilling into the left lane because it's fucking red for so long. Now, look, It's not like we don't have technology, people. We have an interesting relationship with technology in Los Angeles. Parking meters, we're fucking geniuses at, right? They got, oh, we got the sensors in them now. They can tell when the car drives away and they zero out. But we don't have fucking rain sensors for the sprinklers that go off on the side of the freeway when it's raining, and we sure as fuck can't figure out what to do with these arrows. They should go green, and then they should go home. That's how they should go. You should never fucking sit there, and you idiots who are just sitting at the intersection while the light is green and there's no cars coming your direction and the arrow is red, just do what I do. It's a very simple test. It's simple. Take your sun visor and just flip it down. Then sit in your car and stare at a fucking green light. Because the sun visor will block out the arrow. Now you're just a retarded person who's sitting at a fucking intersection staring at a green light and scared to turn left. You'll never get a ticket. I've done 700,000 of these. All you have to do is look in your rearview mirror. If you do not see the fuzz, turn that fucking corner. And by the way, the arrows are so ridiculous that even if a cop is coming your direction, if he's coming toward you, he doesn't even know it. He can't see the fucking arrow. You turn, it's safe. It is the biggest fucking waste of time. It's one thing we could do to alleviate traffic in this godforsaken city, and yet nothing. And not only nothing, nobody gives a shit. When I talked to Gavin Newsom about it, he didn't even know what the fuck I was talking about. What's the other one?
Emotional support animals on planes.
God damn, we had one coming in from Reno today. Did you see that, Maxipata?
Yeah. Very cute dog.
Look, what does it say about you that you need support? Emotional support. Like, I get it if you had to ride the dog, and I get it if it's a fucking seeing eye dog, and I get it if it's an actual service dog, but you're so delicately wired that you can't enter an airplane without your fucking pet with you? That's what you're gonna say to the world? I get it. You wanna fly free. You know what ain't free? Your fucking dignity. What about your dignity? And these are like 40-something-year-old adult males who are like, I must fly with my dog. Why don't we just get you a fucking Huggy Bookie? I will wrestle away Petey Panda or Owly Owl, and I'll give it to your super soft, weak-ass fucking person, and you can walk around with the fucking Huggy Bookie. Here's my old thing. If I ran the airport, if I ran the FAA, here would be my new rule. I wouldn't want to see a note from the doctor. I don't care about paperwork. I don't care about a vest. If you need to travel with an emotional support animal, and in fact you're an adult, I will let you do it. But you must suck your fucking thumb the entire time. I want to see you walking around like Private Pyle from Full Metal Jacket. Pants around your fucking ankles and a thumb in your fucking pussy mouth. Oh, yes, it's your dog. I have a dog. Brian, do you have a dog?
Indeed.
Dawson, you have a dog?
Sure do.
Chris ate his dog, but he used to have a dog. Would we like to travel with our dogs? Well, yes, we would. I would like to travel with a lot of fucking things I like, but I don't because I realize there's something called other human beings who travel on the plane as well. What if everyone who owned a dog just got onto the flight with their dog? That fucking plane would have 185 dogs on it. I was walking through the airport today and I saw this sign like in 2013, I think it was like 3 billion people flew commercially. So they figured it out, young and old, but not you. Oh no, you need your fucking service dog. And here's the rule with the fucking service dog. If it don't have a handle on it, it ain't a fucking service dog. Blind people travel around with a dog with a handle. A big U-shaped handle on that dog. If you got 30 foot of fucking ripcord on one of those zip line retractable fishing reel things and your dog's 15 feet out in front of the Cinnabon, that ain't a dog that needs to beat the fucking airport. As I've said, the way we got to do it is we got to take one of them, we got to put it in the fucking air cannon, and we got to fire it at the impeller to test the metallurgy. Once we fucking eviscerate one goddamn person's dog, that'll send a fucking message. And forget about CNN or the Final Four or March Madness playing on all the TV sets and all the bars and all the airports and all the gin joints. That dog had to walk into this one. We'll put that film of that dog being launched out of the air cannon into the fucking propeller of the fully spooled up Rolls-Royce 777 engine and just have the pink mist shoot out the exhaust and it'll be message fucking sent.
What pisses you off the most?
Wait, hold on.
There we go.
There.
If I can, let me buy you some time here for a second to recover because you're pretty fired up. Equally great rants. Let's say here's how we're going to decide this. Let's say you're headed to Reno. You're headed to Reno on Friday morning with Chris Laxamana. He does, which of the two things he does on your way piss you off more? He's driving to the airport, stops at a red light arrow, red turn arrow, doesn't turn, or brings an emotional support animal on the plane.
Which
are you most furious at?
I'm furious at the arrow because I've told him to drive through the arrows every time, and he does, which is good. The dog, that's the gift that keeps giving, because not only do you have to fucking get on the airplane with it, you got to get off the airplane with it, you got to go to the hotel with it. I'm going to say the dog,
right,
because that is a longer lasting impression.
Hit the post.
Next up. From our big government conference. Making their return to 2020's most disgusted to sleep with Adam list. It's AOC against Elizabeth Warren. Take it away, Ace.
Well, they're both kind of hot in their own way. So, you know, you can't hold that against them. But, and I think a lot of people think I'm going to go in on AOC on this one. Now, AOC is just dumb, and she's put upon, and everything is dangerous to her, and she weeps openly for the babies at the border, and she's just a fucking phony showboater. That's all. She sends tweets out. She doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about. And I cannot believe that this person is anywhere near policies that affect Americans. That is fucking scary to me. But Elizabeth Warren said something the other day that drives me fucking nuts. First off, this whole thing of like, I'm an American Indian because I have high cheekbones and I got into Harvard because I'm an American Indian. Just the fact that here's the insane part. In a world where all we do is cancel people for appropriating other cultures, she appropriated the fuck out of the American Indian culture just to forward her own career, and she doesn't get nearly enough shit about it. So, A, you're not an Indian, and B, and then she comes up with the DNA test where she's like, you see, I'm 182nd Iroquois. Like, yeah, that's nothing, bitch. Everybody I know takes a DNA test, turns out to be like 15%, you know, black and 10% American Indian. The average American has more American Indian in them than Elizabeth Warren does, who's been claiming she's fucking American Indian the entire time. But her latest, which is the wealth tax, she said something the other day that drove me fucking nuts. First off, there's this thing. It's like, hey, how come rich people? How about they just pay their fair share? Rich people pay all the taxes, bitches. That's how it works. They pay not only their fair share. The fair share would just be what's the bill, how many Americans are of working age, and we'll whack it up 250 million times equally. But that's not how it works. Half the fucking country doesn't pay any taxes, and the top like 10%, it's an insane number. Like the top 10% of Americans pay all of the fucking taxes. So fuck you very much with your fair share bullshit, which you've noticed they've walked back. They don't do the fair share much anymore, just like they don't do the fucking school to prison pipeline anymore. But she said this. She goes, I just want like 1.5-2% at the 50 million, your second 50 million. And then she goes, first 50 million, that's free and clear. That's yours. Oh, we didn't pay taxes on the first 50 million, bitch. You don't think they got the shit taxed out of us for the first fucking 50 million? Like, hey, man, I don't even want the first 50 million. Yeah, I know. We paid taxes on it. Everyone pays fucking taxes. So we don't get the first 50 million free and clear. Thanks, Pocahontas. We appreciate your magnanimous gesture, but we already paid taxes. That's how fucking taxes work. When you make money, you pay taxes. Well, what do these people need? These people are job creators. You don't create shit. They create jobs. They have lots of other little taxpayers around them who pay their taxes because they created fucking jobs. They don't sit around in law libraries pontificating, and they certainly don't fucking beat up the people that keep the goddamn lights on in this fucking country.
All right, well, that was a first-round blowout. That was a mismatch from the get-go. Elizabeth Warren went up 20-0 and never looked back.
Yeah.
Next up, we have a round from our pop culture conference. DJ Khaled is back for another one.
Number one seed.
Going up against Ellen.
DJ goddamn Khaled. DJ Khaled obviously does nothing, obviously points at the ceiling a lot. Now he's got his kids involved. He's just fucking taxes, rubs a stink on everyone else's art, and then somehow figures out a way to get paid. I don't know. I couldn't imagine a version of this. I couldn't imagine me going out and doing stand-up comedy, and then Dana Gould wandered out on stage and started going, yeah, and like pointing at the ceiling and yelling, we the best. But I got to tell you, to me, DJ Khaled jumped the fucking shark when he did Hot Ones. When he sat there and did that fucking Hot Wing show. Now, we all knew and know he's talentless. Although, one could argue, maybe the ultimate talent. Having no talent and then ingratiating yourself into people who have talent and working into their lives and fucking hammering checks. But when that big fat puss did Hot Wings, he got like three wings into it, and then accused the host of spiking his wings and wanted to swap the plate around. And then he said, don't say DJ Khaled's quitting. Yeah. Really, fat ass? That's exactly what you're doing. You're quitting. Don't get it twisted. No, I don't need to get it twisted. We have film of you quitting on the fucking show. This is coming from a dude who went through every single one of those goddamn wings and took the best shit of my life that night. Ellen. I think Ellen's funny, and there's certainly things to like about Ellen, but Ellen's fucking ruthless. She's a business person, and just fucking own it. Lean into it. Stop playing this fucking victim stuff. This thing, and if you don't feel like dancing, then don't fucking dance. It's so sad. It's a weird thing. There's this conceit of daytime TV where everyone has to be in a fantastic mood. Why is everyone so fucking happy during daytime TV? It's a bunch of miserable, unemployable fucks that are sitting there watching this cajillionaire. Never been a bigger juxtaposition. Ellen makes 50 million bucks a year. Everyone in their fucking crowd hasn't seen 1500 bucks in 2 years. But she's up there dancing and shaking her moneymaker. And now it has come out. Good. It's come out that she is the person we thought she was, which is fine. Guess who Bill Maher is? Bill Maher's the dick we think he is, and he fucking owns it. He's even-handed. If you're funny, you're funny. So, Ellen, put away the fucking capizios and start telling the jokes.
I think Ellen made a respectable showing there, but we all know who's advancing in the next round. DJ Khaled's going to be around for another one.
Yes.
Finally, we have a matchup from our California conference, which will make Adam matter. Trash and weeds on the freeway or the L.A. homeless?
Oh, God.
I gotta say, the trash and the fucking weeds on the freeway, they're blight. And they add to an overall general depression because everyone is stuck in traffic. And it's not like the scenery's going by at 75 miles an hour. No, you're just sitting there lurching forward 3 miles an hour at a time, and there's nothing to do but look at all the fucking trash and all the weeds and all the dead scrub that's all over the side of the fucking freeway. And I don't get it. Why? First off, we don't have the technology to take care of this. Like, we don't have the manpower. We don't have the wherewithal. It's fucking weeds and trash by the side of the freeway. Get fucking convicts out there to fucking do it. You know, we used to use convicts. We'd go, hey, man, we're giving you three hots and a cot. You get on the fucking side of the freeway, get a fucking stick with a nail in the end of it, and start picking up garbage and repaying your debt to society. You sitting around playing backgammon all day and butt-fucking your neighbor in the next cell, that's not paying back society. paying back society would be you getting on the fucking road and earning it a little bit. So let's get the cons out there. Let's bring back the old Cool Hand Luke style chain gang, and let's get these fucking people repaying their goddamn debt to society with a fucking bottle of Roundup and a couple of hefty bags. What was the other one?
The homelessness in L.A.
Oh, the homelessness. Well, there is no greater example of how feckless our mayor is and our governor is than the homelessness problem. It is literally a measurable. It's the ultimate yardstick to measure how badly you run your society. Because these are human beings that are fucking sleeping on our streets. That's right, our streets. Remember, we pay the taxes, we live in the community, and they are fucking bivouacked everywhere. Now to the point where they just put tents everywhere, tents in the middle of the street, tents on the... And our reaction to that is, here's a porta potty and a hand washing station. Of course you get more of this, idiots. You don't want homeless. Okay, we can all agree we don't want homeless. Why does the homeless number grow every single year? Because you don't do shit about it. As a matter of fact, you do less than shit about it. You fucking facilitate it. You accommodate it. You pontificate it and maxicate. You fucking help the homeless people grow. Listen, pretty soon they're just going to start having kids on the street. You're just going to see fucking OGBYNs just showing up with fucking stirrups. Well, how far? Look, wherever we're at now, it's unthinkable, right? Like, I grew up in these places. There were no fucking tents everywhere. There's no hand-washing stations. There's bathrooms. They got kids' playground toys out there now. What is the next logical step? You motherfuckers, I can't go into one of my warehouses and put up a fucking shelf without you dicks wanting me to pull a fucking permit. But if I want to get 10 pallets and 5 sheets of plywood and build myself a castle underneath the Ventura Freeway, no problemo. No, I'll just go ahead and pull a little electricity off that fucking power line and hook up my hose to that fire extinguisher. Yes, how long before they start physically having kids on the sidewalk? Because that's where we're at. I'm going to be walking down the sidewalk, trip over some placenta and an umbilical cord, and we're literally going to start shitting out kids on the street, because who is going to replace the homeless? We need another generation of homeless.
Wow. I think we're looking at an upset victory there, because the first rant, while inspired, was really more about your longing for a bygone era of prisoners. And
yes.
The second rant was pretty on point.
All right. Homeless.
Homeless advances?
That's what I say.
All right. Find the full bracket at AdamCarolla.com and make sure to tune in tomorrow for more of the big rants. It's March Madness. Madness.
The big rants.
Nice job. All right. Little Reno recap. We flew out there, Alaska Airlines, and Chris got upgraded.
Yeah, that was really cool. So they called my name over the intercom. Chris Loxman, please report to the front. I go there. And she whispers it. She just gets her people around. She's like, "Hey, I saw that you were traveling with two other guys who are sitting in premium seats, and you're in the back. We put you up there so you could sit with your friends."
Ooh la la!
And I thought it was so sweet. I graciously took the ticket, said thank you, and I got to sit up there with Adam and Mike August. But my seat was in front of them, because there were only two seat rows,
mm-hmm.
and I sat in front of them. And next to me was a very drunk social butterfly.
I don't know that we can blame all that on booze, though, can we?
She was pretty toasted.
Oh, was she? But yeah. She was loud and proud, man.
So it starts off with me taking my seat, and I'm wearing my Corolla Show jacket, and she's just like, "The Adam Corolla Show. what's that? And she's yelling it.
Yeah, I had to listen to it the whole time. I don't know that name.
I know. And,
I know all the comedians.
And through my teeth, I'm just like, stop saying that.
She just kept going, what is that? I am secretly jealous of people who can just like point at things and go, what's going on with this thing? You know what I mean? I mean, like, this is like the kind of people that if you ever showed up with a like a neck brace on or Band-Aid on. What's going? What happened? Hey. What are you doing with your face? It's like I am prepared. I'm emotionally prepared. I understand that there's a certain amount of that in society. There's logos you haven't heard of. There are people that have an arm in a sling, things of that nature. I'm prepared for that. And I'm not stupefied by it. You know, like, what is that? What is a jack? Hold on. What's with the silk screen?
That's exactly how she did it,
Brian. But you're able to arrange letters in such a way where they form a name?
Yeah.
And then you put them on a windbreaker? What is going on? Like, yeah.
It's mystified.
There's stuff. It has names on it. Some of the names you know, others evidently you don't.
Yeah.
So she was she a school teacher?
No, she sells cars.
Oh, Jesus. I wish I got in on that. I thought she was saying something about it. I couldn't understand her. I will say God bless her, though, because we were sitting right up against first class. We were back. Nothing worse than when you're sitting coach plus and there's a fucking 7-year-old in first class. And their, like, feet don't even touch the ground. They just sit in there, you know, their feet sticking up. Like,
they don't even know.
Yeah. First class. They don't even know. But at some point, Chris's seatmate was like, we got to get some beers. And and I do love how rules work, because the Alaska airline, this flight attendant, she's like, hey, how about some beers over here? And she's like, well, we really don't do that. And she's like, come on. And the flight attendant's like, okay.
That's all it
just handed everyone beers.
Well, the entire flight, like since the moment I sat down, she says, because we were in the quote premium seats, which is like right behind the first class curtain. And she says, I purposely upgraded. So because I hear we can get a beer. And or we get a beer or wine. We get a drink if I so I upgraded my seat so I can get a beer or wine. She just kept talking about that. And they serve beer and wine to the first class, and they come to us and they hand us a bottle of water.
Right.
And she was just not having it.
No. So she somehow got us all beered up.
Yeah. Well, they were really pushing back. The flight attendant was like, no, sorry. I mean, it's a short flight, and we don't want – if we have to give you beer, we have to give them to everybody. And she was really pushing back. But my seatmate was just –
she was dogged. She was relentless.
She became a hero.
Not all heroes wear capes.
Yeah,
that's right. And we were the benefactors of this beer push, because next thing you know, Mike August and I both had a beer in our hands. So it turned out to be pretty good. So maybe she was a hero, but
a beero.
Boy, did she talk, man.
She had that kind of voice that cuts through every other noise. So you just whatever she said, it was crystal clear. Just maybe the frequency of her voice. And
don't
I was
care.
Intrigued. I was intrigued to respond, because she said, I make all of my friends like through travel. I've made some of my closest friends through travel.
Oh, boy.
And so now I'm thinking, like, oh geez, am I just an awful social? Do I have awful social cues that I can't make a friend through travel, and that's all you do? Like, so I was responding, and I was being nice and asking her questions and stuff, but it was definitely loud, and her constantly asking throughout the flight, who is Adam Carolla? While you're
I had to hear
right
it
behind
every
there.
Time. Who is he? I don't know who he is. Okay. Do you think it will dawn on you if you keep asking who he is?
Yeah.
And by the way, again, they're guys with fucking hats and jackets with realtors' names and shit on it.
Yeah.
I understand. They're human beings. I do not know all of them. I've not heard of all of them. But she was obsessed.
Yeah.
But I couldn't. But then why the obsession? If you don't know, then you don't know. It's just like somebody you don't know. Why?
Well, she said she loved, because I said, I was talking about the show, I said it's a comedy show. She loves comedy.
Oh,
she
that's always makes it worse. It
she
makes
sells
it worse.
Cars and loves comedy. I
have know.
No idea who Adam Carolla is.
Yeah, so.
I think she wanted a party, too, because she's like, I'm going to an Airbnb. We got a hot tub.
Hot tub and a bunch of hot chicks.
Hot tub and hot chicks, and we're getting our booze on.
Yeah.
But where were the hot chicks? Is everyone just going solo out to the...
She said they all drove, but she flew because she wanted to fly. And
high society.
Where was this Airbnb? You think it was just in Reno? Just
it was Tahoe. She went to Tahoe.
Oh, she went to Tahoe.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She wanted to do the hot tub in the snow.
Oh, she wanted to do a hot tub. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's all coming back.
I know a lot about her. You can ask me anything.
I could hear every single word because I was sitting directly behind her, and everyone in the airplane could hear her fucking talking. And the beauty is she thinks everyone on the plane thinks Chris is her boyfriend.
Totally.
And you got to get your bitch under control, Chris. Come on. Loud as hell.
The best part is she was asking about the podcast, so she downloaded it to her phone. So this might be the first episode she hears.
Mm, that would be awesome. All right. Well, I just found out Alex, our guest, just dropped. So we'll do Rotten Tomatoes game. Ooh, and we got the news.
Up.
We got the news as well. All right, Jam in the Van Speakeasy this Thursday. That's March 25th. Dawson's going to be doing stand-up, and Loxy's going to be playing. We got Mangria and some weed blowing around that place, and Adam Ray's going to be opening and pulling balls, so we got a lot planned. So come on out on Thursday to the Jam in the Van. I think it's on the west side. I think it's off of Pico or Olympic. I can't remember where it was. But anyway.
They'll give you the address when you buy the ticket. Come, it's a speakeasy.
Come say hi. It is a speakeasy. All right. We'll take ourselves a break. We'll come back with the Rotten Tomatoes game right after this.